And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host, Matt Watson. Today, excited to be joined by Chase Harmer, who's a longtime entrepreneur, over 20 years of experience, done a lot of different things in fintech. We're going to talk about his experience today and how he continues to parlay that into the next thing. His latest company is a company called Wishes. He's the founder of that, which is a charity-related fintech company, but he has a lot of experience in a lot of other fintech. So before we get started, I wanted to remind everybody that today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is my company. We have 300 employees in the Philippines that do all forms of software development for other companies, front-end, mobile, back-end, QA, whatever kinds of software you need help with. You can check us out at fullscale.io. Chase, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt. Where were you when I first started trying to figure out engineering? I needed you back then.
You know, building software is hard. Sounds like you've been doing it for 20, 25 years, right? Like very long time.
Well, not 25 years. I mean, the first part of it, we were just an acquirer. So we were just really a big, huge sales force, you know, going out there, getting payment relationships with merchants, kind of like a Stripe, but before Stripe was the Stripe that it is today. And we became a card issuer and started building technology back in 2013, 2014.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm based in Kansas City. And one of the things that's weird about Kansas City, maybe you have some insight to, is there are tons and tons of gift card, like payment processing companies in Kansas City. Do you have any idea why that is?
The first thing that comes to mind is those old El Paso commercials. Kansas, oh no, it was in New York City. Sorry. I don't know why they're out there in Kansas City, actually. I think probably it's probably cheaper commercial buildings, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. There's a lot of payments related and like gift card, like card issuing rewards, like all these weird card related things in Kansas City. I don't know. Maybe they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
If you're not doing rewards anymore, it's hard to get traction. You know, you got to give it all away to some earn a little slice, you know.
So why in, I think you said 2013, you went from like reselling other payments, fintech, like payments related services to building your own. So when you wanted to build your own, what was the nexus of that then?
Well, I was making close to $40 million a year at that time. From like 19 to 32, I built a pretty big business. But every year, these clients were calling me and asking me to reduce the fees. But I was thinking about Stripe and I was like, yeah, like these guys are charging like 2.9 and 30 cents. Like, how are they doing this? And it's just because people don't care if it's easy, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to make it easy because the process back then to actually sign clients up was tough, you know? Got to get this and that and this, and it just takes forever.
A lot of legal paperwork.
Yeah. Well, that's where you lose clients, right? Unless you, like, you know, they want to sign up, whatever. But, you know, but even more than that, they won't stick around if they're, you know, at the 2.9 unless they're getting actual value from there. And the only way you can deliver real value is by building technology. Now, I had no idea what the hell I was doing, but, you know, I knew that if I was going to build something worth anything, that I had to start building technology. And so I was just dove right in and stopped dead in my tracks doing what I was doing because I built a huge business. And that essentially paid for a lot of my mistakes to learn, you know. So
it sounds like you used the profits of the first company to fund going and building this tech platform originally.
Yep, I did. So I had an idea because I was servicing the hotel space. I had traveled around the last 8 years of the country, like signing up thousands and thousands of hotels. I had the second largest hotel association in the United States. So my idea was, well, the second largest revenue loss item for hotels at the time was when the no-shows, right? When people don't show up to the hotel or whatever, the hotel loses twice because typically if they try to charge the person, they'll charge it back. So they get the charge back and they'll get the lost room revenue. So it's kind of like a double whammy. It's still probably a hurtful revenue loss item for them today. But I came up with this clever idea to tie consumers to transactions when they weren't present at the scene, during that transaction, when that authorization happens. So they couldn't deny it later. And but once I built that, I was like, yo, we could, there's like so much more we can do in the e-commerce space and the travel space. And so I just built that. It was on Twigs, by the way, anyway. So like, it wasn't like a stable product, I would say, you know, it was a house built of straw. And so it needed to get blown down anyways to start over. But it was my first attempt. I've kind of built something that like looked reasonably like, oh, it could potentially work, but no. And then I went out and raised $30 million
holy moly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a huge, massive product. I mean, we were before our time, before Stripe was doing card issuing stuff like this, we were doing it back in 2013. And our whole model was to, we saw a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs, they were buying media, but they were using their own debit cards because most guys are small business guys. They don't have credit cards and rewards cards or things like this. But I was like, yeah, look, we actually can do the whole bundle and get the payments going and then actually let them operate multiple ad accounts with virtual cards so that they can, if one gets shut down, they can keep operating we can give them 2% cash back on the spend. And that was a winner, you know, and that actually helped us scale the company and kind of we fit into our niche because Stripe was charging and they still charge 1% on the cards themselves. And so by us giving 2% cash back and being able to run multiple campaigns, we really focused on those advertisers and pretty much every e-commerce person alive, if you try to make money, you have to sell stuff on the internet and you have to pay for it. So
when you raised the $30 million, did your company already have a product and revenue, or was that like kind of early stage seed fund?
No. So we started doing virtual cards back in 2013, and that scaled fast. We had some huge clients and we were making millions of dollars a month. It scaled super fast. But like I said, I was my first company really. And I just didn't, one of the things that I really sucked at and I learned some tough lessons was building process. The process, I had no process, you know, it was just like, we need to go faster, get more engineers, not like take a step back. Hey, like what do we need to do to like manage these guys to make them more productive? No, let's put more people in there with no process or management. And that obviously didn't work very well, but those are learning lessons that you don't forget for sure. So you
raised the $30 million to really scale the business. Like you already had a ton of traction, ton of revenue. So did the $30 million help you make some key hires and get the processes in place and get all that stuff smoothed out?
Yeah. I mean, I think, it wasn't until later where we didn't have anything documented. Like, I mean, imagine like talking about like 6 years of like tons of engineers, and then Pedro gets hit by a bus and he was doing it on Ruby on Rails, and you know, no one's doing Ruby on Rails anymore. Like, how do you fix this little part that he did? No one knows, right? Because it's not documented. So those are the things that really, yeah, like they cost a lot of money, like sucked up a lot of time, but because we were making revenue, you know, we were able to survive and push through it. But yeah, I mean, those are again some painful lessons for sure. So
how hard was it building a tech company in fintech for you guys? Like, was it really difficult from a compliance perspective, you know, with Visa and MasterCard issuing cards, having customers signed up? Was that like one of the biggest nightmares, is just all the compliance to actually make this thing work?
Yeah. Compliance is definitely the hardest part of this equation, even this time around. And it's worse now because of all the things that happened to the crypto companies, like the last couple of years, you know, like the Sam Bankmans and all these guys, all these banks were behind these guys, you know? So, but obviously he had zero compliance. Like they were just doing stuff by the seat of his pants, you know, because there was so much money coming in there, but compliance is so heavy now. So it took us 12 months to get through it this time around. And I mean, the first time around, super, super massive. A lift, but this time was a 25 times worse, you know, just because of all the things that have happened.
And when you say this time, is that for your new company Wishes or just?
Yeah. Yeah. So the same thing that we do here, because we actually, when say how Wishes works, and I guess I'll just say this so that way you can understand the compliance flows that.
Give us the story.
Yeah. So Well, the story is, you know, I got sick and tired of going into the grocery store and everyone asking me for a dollar and never understanding where the dollars go. And then, you know, I started giving to charities more often, and, you know, that's the last I hear of it. Once that money's gone, it's like, that's the relationship's over, you know? So I wanted to understand the reason why we give as people, like, we want to connect and we want to help someone with the Maui fires, like, as an example. You want to help them. Like, you're like, hey, I want to help. But you just don't know where the money, like, if you don't know where the money's going or how to help someone, like, how, where's the connection, right? So I just wanted to build connection into that, because you have the time or you have money. And so, so that's really where it all started. And then, what we do for Wishes is we actually, when donors donate, they can donate to a specific, I'll take the Maui fires again. Let's say someone lost their house and they need a room to stay at. They could want a hotel room, or they need an airline ticket out of there. You can donate directly to a category. They can get the card and instantly spend inside of the portal. But we turn donations into virtual MasterCards, and then we send them directly to the Apple and Google wallet. So everything's fully transparent for the donors. They know exactly what they're spending it on. They know, like, they can have that connection with, to know that they help somebody. But most importantly, also important, is getting the tax deductibility and the rewards that will come that, with that. Because a lot of times you give, well, you give through a platform like GoFundMe, there is no tax deductibility on it. You know, you can't get tax deductibility on giving to an individual. It's just, it's not in the IRS tax code. However, because we have a 501c3 public charity, that governs the impact to whoever is going to get that money, whether that's a charity or cause a crisis. So you're actually donating into the charity. Charity is then actually governing that impact. So every donation through our platform is tax deductible.
So in some weird way, does that make it, how do you vet that, right? So if I go in there and say, hey, I need $500, I set this up. Now somebody gives me $500, it's charitable, and then I get the $500. Like, somebody's going to game the system that way, right?
Well, I mean, so at the end of the day, like, people give to people and they're emotionally tied to a story, right? You're not just going to give somebody $500, right? And at the end of the day, like, if he's like, hey, I need money for food, right? Our platform works like, if we actually send that MasterCard over, have you ever had a gas card before? You can't use that gas card in Macy's, okay? Like, in our platform, if you're asking for groceries, that's where they have to be spent. Like, you can only spend them on that. Like, so he might be lying. Maybe he's getting, who knows, right? You know, but he still has to get money from somebody, right? And at the end of the day, like, if you know that you're actually helping him get what he needs, I mean, is that a bad thing? I mean, you know, we do vet every single nonprofit that comes on there. It's individuals, we make it category specific. So none of it can go to a bank account. It has to be given in cards. So, like, they have to say, well, I need a rideshare for my family, or I need, you know, Tommy broke his arm, or, but those funds are distributed through MasterCard. So you can always see them. Individuals can only raise funds that way. Nonprofits have the ability to raise for admin and impact. So, like, if you, but you as a donor should have that choice. This is why we built the platform. Like, I don't want to just give to a charity. The biggest question every donor has is, what goes to admin? What goes to impact?
Yeah. Exactly. 100%.
Exactly. Right. So we should have that choice. Like, if I want to, if I know you, if I know that you guys are doing good work, hey, maybe I'll give to the admin, like, you know, because I know that you're running a good business. Just like the Charity Water model. Like, Charity Water does a good job of this. They have the mission. They're like, hey, if you don't know us, give to the mission. If you know us, you know, we do good work. There's real people. There's, like, a real business there. Like, they got to do things, you know, and that requires cost and overhead. So not everything can go towards the mission if you have a big organization, but it should be the donor's choice. And that's really why I built the platform.
Well, it sounds like another problem you solve is these weird little one-off scenarios where something should be a charitable donation, but they're not, right? They don't go through all the effort of, like, we need to get, I don't know, a minivan for somebody and their family because their husband died, or, like, whatever the thing is, right? Like, kind of like you said, or, like, could be a GoFundMe thing, but it should be, like, a charitable expense. And, like, I would love to give them money and it be a charitable expense, but it's too much hassle to make it one, right? So in some ways, does your platform kind of help solve that problem too?
Yeah. So we built rewards into the model, and it wasn't, and because I like to arbitrage credit cards, number one, but I thought, well, listen, it's not a bad thing. Who's going to be mad? What donor is going to be mad if they're actually earning cash back and getting incentives and tax deductibility on these transactions? Yeah, it's not like what we lead with, but, like, it's a cool thing to have. And all things being created equal, if you're not getting that on anywhere other platform and you can see all where all your money goes in real time, like, I don't even see it being a choice, really. Like, why would you do it any other way?
So is there any reason that something like GoFundMe doesn't offer the same sort of charity part of it?
Well, they're built as a for-profit, and they're so big now that they can't go back and rearrange their whole entire model. So what I did in the very beginning is I had tax accountants and CPAs and lawyers all come together and put together this structure that I created with the public charity and these two things. So like essentially we did it all from the ground floor the right way. It would be really hard for them. I mean, they'd have to rip apart their whole entire business model and redo it. It's easier for them to just buy wishes than to do that.
Okay. So is your company actually a nonprofit itself?
So we have our fintech, which is Give Wishy. This is where the card issuing happens and all this. And then the nonprofit is a public fund nonprofit, and it's run by my colleague, Remy Albertrotti. And the initiative behind it is homelessness, but we leverage that to govern the impact for the purposes of what Wishes does in the marketplace.
Well, I think this is really cool. And I think charity, corporate sustainability, all of these things are kind of a hot topic and are really important. And actually, I'm going to the Philippines next week to see our team in the Philippines. I have 300 employees there, right? And going to some remote island that's like a fishing village to take a bunch of stuff to the elementary school there, taking them fried chicken, and we're building them like over a roofed like outdoor area and all this stuff. And we do a lot of this kind of stuff in the Philippines. We do a lot of charity work, and honestly, I don't even know if we get a charity write-off for any of it, but it's all good. But I really enjoy doing it, and it's something that more and more people need to do. And you know, whenever people, you know, probably like yourself, a lot of people come to me and ask me for donations for this, that, and whatever. And I think we all have certain things that we want to donate to and we want to support, right? So a lot of my support ends up going to helping children in the Philippines and different things. And
I mean, you got to align a lot of this stuff as a business guy. You know, sometimes you got to align this with your business itself, you know, and that makes sense for you and you're doing good things. And so, I mean, and I think any business that can align with a nonprofit or a mission that empowers, you know, the business too, because it really makes sense. You can't be like a clothing store and then do something like something completely weird. You know, it's like, it's got to kind of all make sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it matters a lot to our employees. Like our employees really enjoy being part of it and it being part of the company. So I think you mentioned this before, maybe we skipped over a little bit, like, you started Wishes for that same problem, right? You're like, the problem is I want to donate money, but I just don't trust where it's going.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to go do this thing. But you were able to parlay all of your experience in fintech to do that. I mean, some of the platform that you had built before, is it some of the same underlying technology at Wishes, or did you have to rebuild and recreate all this stuff?
All rebuilt, yeah, because that company got acquired. So like it was all rebuilt, all new relationships, all new grind, you know, sucked, but it was way easier this time around. You know, I'm not the first person so transparency in charitable giving has been a hot topic forever. Nobody can solve it because there's two huge players inside of the charitable giving space and they're old dinosaurs and they can't innovate. So they have to buy people. And the only people that came up with charitable transparency are like crypto. It's like, well, yo, like, first of all, nobody uses that shit. Okay. Like,
no, nobody does.
Exactly. There's no chance. Like, it's not going to scale. Right. So the only way to scale a business is to not change user behavior. Right. So we're all used to getting digital cards on our phone and shopping at the store and doing all these things. So we're not changing user behavior and we create that transparency. And I got news flash is that MasterCard has been doing ledgers for 40 years. Like, that's why you can do a statement in real time. That's what a ledger is. And that's like the big thing about blockchain. It's like, well, there's a ledger. It's like, dude, there's MasterCard and Visa has been doing that since like the beginning of time, dude. You know, so, you know, at the end of the day, like I literally was solving this problem and I was like, it's so simple to me. So, you know, it's not very simple. It actually sucks even the second time around, but I was able to solve it. So we're super stoked about it.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that think Web3 and crypto blockchain is the future to all fintech related things, right? And then we have people like you who are actually doing it, who actually have customers and revenue that are like, I don't need any of that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, digital money is the future, right? But it's like the hybrid car. You don't realize how useless it is today until you start driving from one state to another state. And there's no fucking supercharging stations. And you're like, yo, like, how do I actually like get, how do I go anywhere now? So you need a gas station. You need a gas car. Just like you need credit cards. Credit cards aren't going away anytime soon. So our inherent bottom, like foundational technology, we have some of the best blockchain developers in the world that work for us.
And so you do? Okay.
We do. So we do, we have the capabilities to do that, but it's not mainstream. So like it would be pointless for me to go out to the market and try to say, hey, transparency is here, crypto, blockchain. I mean, that's the story of blockchain, right? So I think that's nothing new, right? But what is new is that you can create transparency with real world technology that can be utilized today. And there's actually more money on the card issuing side because of the fact that we're doing the platform for free. There's no costs. But when we issue cards and those are spent at the retailers, we actually earn revenue on all those on the spend. And so to us, doing it this way is not only like real world today stuff, but it's also more rewarding for us financially.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little more. You know, I think you just mentioned part of it, but as you talk about building a business like this that is primarily focused on nonprofits, like how do you monetize and, you know, generate revenue for Wishes?
Yeah, so essentially, if you think about the GoFundMe model, they charge the 2.9% on the front end of the transaction. We're similar in that way, where the donor
don't they also charge like 5% or something as well? Don't they also charge some other fees?
They probably do, you know, but that's the one that everyone sees in their eyeball, right? It's like 2.9 and 30. The donor can tip it or it just comes off of the donation itself. That's the only fee in our platform. But because we built the whole entire payments infrastructure, essentially when those cards are issued and delivered to that wisher or charity, whatever it is, they spend those dollars in the market. They need groceries, they need a ride share, they need gasoline, they need whatever it is. They spend those MasterCards. That retailer is paying us 2% on the card itself, just like just you're a merchant, you take a credit card transaction, cost you money. So same thing there, but we're the card issuer, so we're actually making that 2%. Then they pay us to send them the business. So we have all these people that need stuff for that we're actually giving them right to their door. It's like, hey, listen, the store's right to you. You don't have to go anywhere. You know, get the money, and you're shopping at all the same stores that you'd shop at anyways: Amazon, Walmart, Walgreens, Sam's Club. All of the top big box retailers in America that you would normally spend dollars at, you can do it inside of our platform. And those retailers pay us because it's essentially a captive portal. We're basically like a big publisher on the backside of our platform.
So you're issuing, you know, a Visa, MasterCard or whatever, but it's almost like you're issuing a gift card only to their store.
No, it's a MasterCard. So because we have so many stores and we have all these categories, right? So let's just say pets, right? You got PetSmart and Pet Supply and blah, blah, and like all these other ones. So you have all these places that you can spend dollars, right? You don't have to go to that store. And that's the bullshit that exists in the market today. It's like, well, let me get a gift card and let me do this. And the more steps that you create, the less revenue you're going to do. It's just bottom line. People like, they love it, but like the more work they have to do, they're not going to keep on coming back and like be thrilled about it. So you just got to make it easy. And so MasterCard can be spent anywhere in the world. Anywhere where his credit cards are accepting, his MasterCard and Visa are there. So, you know, they have choices. They can spend at any of those retailers and we get paid the same way.
So Wishes is brand new, right? When does Wishes launch?
Yeah. So we're super, super close. We're doing our final like sign-offs with the compliance. And I spent about $2 million to get it here. And then we just finished our race for about $2 million. So we have money in the bank. And really, that's what we're waiting on to kind of get this thing rolling is, you know, as a fintech and as responsible for everybody else's money and donations, you want to make sure that those businesses can be in business. So as a fintech that moves money, it's really important. And that was kind of the last hurdle that we had to go crossover before we could go live. So, yeah.
So I'm curious, you said it costs $2 million or so in investment to get to the company here to launch point, which is a lot of money, right? But I'm curious if you would break down like how much of that was like R&D, legal compliance, like to give somebody an idea of like, hey, if I was going to start a fintech fintech company. How much money do I need to do this?
So what the first thing that you got to understand about starting a fintech is that you're in the big boys world, right? So like to even sit at the table, like it's a high stakes poker game, you know, you can't even sit at that table unless you got 50 grand on the table, right? So they won't even let you play, right? So you got to pay, it's a lot of money that you got to shell out first just to be in the game. And I think that's a lot of it. It's like the compliance, and you got to get consultants, you got to pay the banks, you got to pay the card issuers just to, so that they're like, okay, like, and then they're still underwriting you, by the way, after they're like charging you an arm and a leg. So you're putting up reserves, you're doing all these things. And so a lot of it is that kind of cost. You have a lot of setup fees, you have a lot of this kind of cost, but then there's ongoing monthly maintenance fees. So the thing about building a fintech, and I think this is the worst thing that I would point out, is that every single contract that you get, and you can, you know, technology always takes longer than you think it will. Okay. No matter what.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. So like, you're like, okay, like just give me like 3 months and then we're going to be good. Right. And then you let the minimums kick in then, you know, or like 4 months or whatever. Negotiate 4 months. 4 months goes by and then you start eating like $15,000, $20,000 a month. But you have like four of these guys, right? That are like, right? So that's a money suck, right? It's just a money suck. And it sucks because when you're developing, you can't, in order to be in the game, to be on the field, you have to pay these guys to play, right? So if you're not done, you're screwed, you know? And
So give me an example of that. You don't have to say who, but let's pretend it was the card issuer. It's like, hey, is it $100,000 to be part of their platform? And then it's $15,000 a month in minimum or something. Like, give us an idea of like what you're talking about. And you don't have to name specifics.
That's actually super close. Like, as the card issuer, it's like, you know, it's 100 grand. That's through the wallet and all these things and the provisioning. Mind you, you still got engineers that you got to pay, right?
And then, yeah, to actually make it work.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah, just pay this and like miraculously see what happened. But, you know, so you're paying these guys and they're trying to figure things out. And a lot of that is R&D. So no matter what platform you're working with, I've rarely seen a time where everything just is like super smooth, right? It's just like, oh, well, this isn't working. Well, let me check this. And then 2 weeks go by. Now that 2 weeks, it's a killer because like that's a two week time where, you know, like that's, if you're counting the whole month, 15,000 or 20,000, that's 10 grand that just went by that you can't do anything and you can't move. So you're just like, you're forced into a situation where this thing just keeps going and going. And so that's really what you got to control. I think that's the part that gets out of control if you're not super like tight about it. And I'm lucky that I did this before, because man, like the first time we did this, all of a sudden you just look down. It's like that rocket money thing. You got like 50, you have 50, you know, companies that are all charging you money and you're like, dude, what the hell?
Yeah, right.
So we were super tight about it, but the moral story is it's expensive. So all that stuff's expensive, but the banks just being a part, having a seat at the table is expensive. You can't go there and try
so
to
you've,
build a site and sell clothing and be like, yo, like we're in business. It's not how it works.
So yeah. You've built the business. You've obviously have some employees, development team, and you've got, you know, overhead from that. But it sounds like you also have like this huge underlying burn rate, probably from all these financial agreements and platforms, all that kind of loom overhead every day, right? You're like, man, I got to spend 50 grand, 100 grand a month, whatever it is, just to be in business.
Yeah, just to be
in business. For all this stuff.
Just to be in business and not make money, right? Because you're not actually in business. You're still building that thing, right? So it's like, you know, and you got people costs, you know, like, and so you try to keep everything as low as you can. One of my colleagues, his name's Matt, I invested into one of his companies called Illumi. They're a huge platform. This dude, he was one of the big, the original like founders of RingCentral. And I can't think of his last name right now, but this guy built this whole entire platform, Illumi, like over these last $25,000 a month burn rate for like, dude, massive platform. I'm like, dude, how did you do that? He's like, I had all these people working for me for free. I was like, dude, I don't know. It took him a long time though, you know, and time is the one thing that you can't ever get back. Like, you know, it's like, you know, you have a great idea to execute and get in the market before someone steals it.
Well, but this is an issue that happens with all startups, right? It's worse for you because it's not just, hey, I have three developers and a couple other employees or whatever that I have their overhead of every month. You're like, I also have this giant, you know, like platform vendor fees thing. But yeah. It's like every startup has that to some degree, right? Like one of my companies, I had like a 200,000 a month burn rate. Like every month, I'm like, holy crap, got a huge burn rate. How do we grow faster?
Yeah.
Well, here you are. You're ready to launch this thing. So how are you going to launch this thing and grow it? Like what is the like go-to-market strategy for Wishes to overcome this burn rate you're dealing with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so because I've been in the payments business for a long time, I put together some big deals that are actually going live this week. And those deals are going to, like, month one, we'll have like $300,000 coming in from those deals. Yeah. Wow. So like, yeah, I mean, now if that could just stay like that every month going forward, that would be good. But like, you know, hopefully it's not just a banger and that's, but you know, it's a good way to start. You know, but the payments revenue is really great for us. That's part of the focus is that, you know, we onboard these nonprofits. We have like 400 or 500 of them that are pre-boarded. And then we have like tens of thousands of donors that lifted their hand and said, hey, they want to.
Can you give us an example?
Of what? A nonprofit?
Yeah. Like just like, okay, I have like Wayside Waves that's going to come on the platform and all their donors are now going to donate through our platform instead of the way they did before. Like how is that?
So think about
what's going to happen or?
Yeah, exactly. So like, because of the fact that we think about it from a nonprofit's perspective. Okay. So today raising money in the market is hard. It's not easy, you know, and if I go to you and I say, hey, Matt, we have this initiative, you might give me $100 or whatever it is that one time. Right. But then I go back to you in 2 weeks and I'm like, hey, Matt, hey, thanks for, you know, helping me out last time. By the way, we have this next thing and I'd love you to be a part of it. You're like, yeah, no, you know, maybe not, you know, I got other things to do. But it's a different conversation when I can go back to you and I say, hey, look at the impact that you made. Thank you so much. And by the way, we'd love you to participate in this next thing. Now, that might change your opinion about how you respond to that. And, you know, obviously understanding the money is everything. So we help them raise more money. And I think that's the pitch to them is that, you know, we actually can bring in revenue for them because we're exposing them to donors they don't have access to today. And then when they come on, they in order for them to re-engage with their own donors, they obviously have to load all their donor base on top. And so
right.
Now all of a sudden, boom, we just, you know, it's really easy for us to grow because we get their whole donor base and we're not going to market to them but then that donor, if he's donating to them, there's a good chance at some point there's going to be another Maui fire or something like this. And then he wants to donate to something outside of what he came on board for. And at that point, he becomes our customer, right? Now he's a Wishes customer. We're not taking him away in any way. But like we're supporting all the other charities that exist that are in good standing. And so there's plenty of other things to donate to. There's not just one charity or one good thing to spend time or money on. And so we want to help every charity that's doing good work out there, you know?
So does your platform also help them do like subscription donations or other things that help drive more donations?
Yep. So we do all the recurring revenue. So like I was saying before, I came from the payments world. So we're a card acquirer or a payments acquirer first. So although we do the card issuing and that's like the macro problem that we're solving in the market, the steady stream of income that we will be really consistent will be the payment processing. That's dependable. It's reliable. And, you know, we get these nonprofits to sign up. Most of them will just come and bundle it because they're getting such good value in what they're able to do through the fundraising efforts and being transparent. That just makes common sense. And so that's really kind of the game plan is we have a lot of nonprofits to board day one. They're already pre-boarded and we have SaaS fees that go on with that because you don't want to be a nonprofit and then only do category specific donations. Like you have overhead probably. And so in order to actually add your bank account as a nonprofit, you know, it's part of the subscription fee. And so that's how we obviously earn money. It's reasonable, but there's a lot of value that they get in that. And if you want to send money to your bank account, you need to pay the subscription fee.
So the charities you're talking about that you're going to be onboarding, you know, this month as you launch, how did you build the relationships with these charities? Are they, you know, companies that you knew or with the other, you know, payment processing you did before? And you're like going back to them and say, hey, you worked with my other company. This is a better option because it's specific to you. Like how did you get these customers?
Well, we were reaching out through LinkedIn and doing those types of things, but Well, I kind of did it the ninja style, is that like I wanted to go get the big charities, but how do you get the big charity without being a salesperson? And there's so much bureaucracy in a big, huge charity like the Red Cross, as an example. It's so massive.
Right.
There's so many regional. So how do you get in there? Well, I got in there as a volunteer, right? I was like, well, I'm going to go see, like, you know, it's the ground floor. So I snuck in through the back door. Then I worked my way in there, like, hey, this is what we do, by the way, like, oh, blah, blah. And like, oh, you're so great. Like, we need to touch you in here. So it takes a while. But you're not coming in as a salesman. You're coming in as like, hey, I'm part of the team. And like, hey, we offer this cool stuff. I'd love to be able to help you. I see the issues that you're having. So I wove my way in as a ninja in some of the circumstances like that.
You were doing the hard work.
I was like, man, this is taking forever. I felt like at some point I'd get introduced to the right people and make the connections. And, you know, that's what happened. And I think no matter what you're doing in their business, if you can find a ninja way to get in there without being a salesperson, I think it's always easier to make connections and have them want to root for you. So, you know what I mean? Go in there and be like, hey, wishes, and like, we can change your business. It's like, dude, we're the Red Cross, fool. Like, get out of here. Yeah.
Well, so is Red Cross really the company, that one of your customers?
Yeah. It actually is. Yeah, exactly.
So how long did it take you to ninja your way through that? Is that like a 12-month ninja skill?
Well,
ninja warrior course, or
it's like 6 months. 6 months to get a pilot done in Nevada and California.
Okay.
2 months. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Red Cross is they actually are specifically like, their model is really aligned with what we do, because, you know, most people don't know this, but if someone's house burns down, the Red Cross is there. If like they're at every disaster scene everywhere. So like most people just don't know that. They think this police and all this stuff, but there's always some sort of volunteer there, and they're from the disaster recovery team. And they're the ones that actually help the families. They pay them out and do all this stuff. And so there's a huge part of their model, but it's also a huge pain point for them. And I think we solve a lot of those pain points, but in order to have that conversation, you just got to work your way up to the right people. And
I thought maybe you were going to tell me that you got these customers from your previous relationships, but instead you learned to be a ninja, which I think is an even better story.
It's like, sometimes it's a new biz. Like I wasn't really servicing the nonprofit world before. So like, but how do I go into meaningful relationships, because there's a bazillion nonprofits. A lot of them are mom and pop, you know, type nonprofits. And so how do you go get relationships that are super meaningful that can make a big impact to the bottom line, not only for them, but for the business,
Well, and so now you go to the next one. You're like, hey, we do business with the Red Cross.
Exactly.
And they're like, check. That's it.
Exactly. That's what you lead in with. That's why you got to get a big one. And then the dominoes fall, you know? So does
having the Red Cross, I assume you may have some other clients lined up too, does that take care of your burn rate, or are you guys still on the treadmill of we got to grow?
Yeah, no, I mean, we got to grow. I think, you know, we're going to be methodical about it, because being first with what we're doing, it actually matters. Like, this is a huge problem. The nonprofit charitable giving is $2.6 trillion a year, represents 7% of the US GDP. It's massive. Massive business that literally has no technology, and they've been trying to solve this problem forever. And every donor that you talk to, it's probably been, they all think the same thing, like what goes to admin, what goes to impact, and they all think it. And so I think it's the market's ripe for this, and I don't want to rush out too fast and try to scale it and then something go wrong. What I want to do is make sure that it's working brilliantly, and that, you know, the customer journey is going, you know, really well, and it's like meeting all the check boxes, and then try to super scale it. I mean, we have a solid investor, has built $1 billion companies, and he's just a super interesting dude. But it's a game changing, disruptive product for sure. Like, I mean, disruption, real innovation. You know, when you get the iPhone 15, that's not innovation, dude. It's still
the phone.
It's a phone. But they'll give you like,
it still plays like Candy Crush.
It's a new innovative, like, it's not innovation.
It has titanium.
Exactly. That's the innovation. But this is real innovation. Like, this is like industry disrupting.
Solving problems, real problems.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I think, you know, especially anybody who's out there who's thinking about building a fintech company, I'm sure they learned a few things today, the challenges of doing that. If anybody's listening and they need help scaling their development team, check us out at Fullscale, fullscale.io. No matter what your tech stack is, we can help you save about 70% of what it costs to hire somebody in the US. Your company is wishes.inc, right? Check you guys out. Yeah. Again,
check
this was...
you can go there. Yeah, you can get on the wait list if you're not working. Yeah. Sorry. So yeah, you can get on there and go pre-register. Depending upon when this comes out, we'll be on the Apple and iOS first and then Android. But you know, it should be relatively soon. So whenever you're going to hear this, go check the Apple store and it should be in there.
All right. Thanks again. Once again, this was Chase Harmer with Wishes. Thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.